Thanks for tuning in to The Rewind, where we dig back in our vault of previous shows. I'm your host, Alan Stein. On today's Rewind episode of the Pure Sweat Basketball Show...
There's so many different things that go into drafting a player and wanting to have a player on your in your organization.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
This is Reese Davis from ESPN, and you're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
Thanks for checking out the show that is dedicated to raising the game. I'm your host, Alan Stein. In today's episode, I sit down with friend, mentor, and one of the most brilliant basketball minds I know of, Mr. Pete Filo of TPG Sports Group. Quick backstory. Pete Filo is a 14-year NBA veteran, having worked with both scouting and executive positions with the Dallas Mavericks, Minnesota Timberwolves, and Indiana Pacers. Pete founded and directed the Reebok Adidas Eurocamp in Treviso, Italy from 2003 to 2011 and had 82 players drafted in the NBA. He also served as the GM and director of scouting for the Chinese national team from 2009 to 2012, which included the Asian Championships gold medal and a trip to the 2012 London Olympics. Pete, you are one of the best evaluators of talent in the game. Aside from someone's physical stature, what's the first thing you look for when you're evaluating a player?
Alan, thanks for having me on. It's greatly appreciated. Always love talking to you. It depends on the position, quite frankly. A lot of times there are certain things or characteristics that are weighted differently by position. So, however, generally try to identify if a player has a good feel for the game. You know, can they read situations quickly and make decisions efficiently? Things like that. But each position has their own set of characteristics that translate, at least to the NBA, if we're talking about the NBA level. And I'm sure at different levels there are things that must translate in a certain way. But with our game, the rules are a little different, and therefore each position has their own set of characteristics that are weighted a little differently.
Can you elaborate? How about, let's just talk about a guard, for example, whether it's a point guard or a shooting guard. Outside of IQ and decision-making, which I think you just established is important for every player on the court, what are some of the characteristics you look for in guards?
Sure. So, if you're talking about, let's say, if there's a point guard that has a combination of size, shooting ability, IQ, feel, and athleticism. If someone has those four things, they're probably Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
and then from there, you may want to talk about the pick and roll game, how they read it, how they run it, and then you can go down the list from length, defensive ability, ability to get in the lane, toughness, competitiveness, anticipation, instincts, but. Yeah, generally, if a guy has size, ability to shoot, feel, and athleticism, that guy's going to be a pretty scary package coming at you, and you see what a guy like Russell does.
So. Absolutely. Now, assuming a player doesn't have all four of those characteristics, since a Russell Westbrook is very rare, is it even fair for me to ask you, can you put those in order of what you'd look for if you had to rank those four characteristics?
It's tough. It is tough because now sometimes you talk about your team and the makeup and things like that. But generally, if you're talking about a guard, you may put a guy at like all-star level status or in an area if he's got all four of those. If we're just talking about four, if you want to talk about the fifth one, I don't know if you can put any one of those ahead. Now you can weigh them a certain way, but if a guy doesn't have great size, but he has the rest, he just may be a notch below. Or if you take any one of those, now if you take shooting out of it, now to me that's a different evaluation, because I think shooting is number one in many of the positions, usually one through four. in our game right now. And so, you know, a non-shooter on a playoff team is really dangerous, you know, especially in a seven-game series. You don't see many non-shooters out there. And when you do, the opponent has the ability to really scheme and do things, and it becomes a little bit of a chess match. And that non-shooter better be pretty special at something else in order to stay on the floor and make a difference.
Gotcha. So, I mean, when you look at a Chris Paul or a Kyrie Irving or even a Corey Joseph, guys that may lack a little bit of size, they just overcompensate completely with their quickness, their athleticism, their ability to shoot, their decision-making, their IQ. So I guess if you can overload some of the other characteristics, it can help make up for something you may lack. Is that fair?
Yeah, no question. And again, if you're weighing them all and giving them a score and things like that, like we do here at TPG, you know, I think you know, you'll have a range, you know, where guys could be a future all-star, and then right below that maybe a starter with an arrow going up to all-star, depending on how things go. And then you got to dig deeper into a guy's internal makeup, because he may have all those things. And we've seen this in the past too, without mentioning names, but that talented guy that has it all, but internally he's just not made it. You've seen it, Alan.
I mean, you've
brought a lot of guys over the years that are super, super talented, have the whole package, and you say to yourself, wow, okay, this guy is going to be special. And then internally, he just doesn't have the wiring to either put in the time, stay focused on that right course, doesn't have the foundation. There's something missing, and then they don't make it. And it's a real shame, usually.
Yeah, without question. Yeah, if they lack grit, if they lack you know, the ability to stay composed, if they lacked confidence, if they lack any of those intrinsic characteristics, if they don't have those, it'll undermine everything else for sure. Now, you have tremendous global experience and have for well over a decade. What would you say is, I guess it's kind of a two-parter, kind of what's the biggest difference between the quote-unquote European player and players here in the U.S.? And I think, which will probably be a very similar answer, what are the biggest differences between the way they develop players over in Europe and the way we're developing players here in the United States?
That's a great question, and every once in a while, I'll be around a couple colleagues in the NBA and scouts that have been on both continents, not just domestic scouts, but guys that have traveled the world and seen a lot of global basketball. And it's usually a pretty fun topic to talk about. But to me, the biggest difference is probably how the kids are taught at an early age. You know, in Europe, the bigs are usually taught from the outside in. That's why the reason you see the European bigs or international bigs have the ability to dribble, handoff, pass, shoot, play, make. The guards are also stressed the importance of pick and roll game, ball movement, et cetera. So instinctively, they're ball movers and not stoppers, where, it's just over there that they promote ball movement. We're getting better. We really are. And I love to see the development of our game over here. I think USA Basketball has done a tremendous job in the last probably 5 to 8 years of all coming together. You know, it's difficult. Our country's so big. And in Europe, you know, these countries are the size of states.
Yeah.
And so they can have a country philosophy and really focus on that philosophy and develop players that way under their philosophy. And then, you know, the Lithuanian schools and the Serbian schools and the Croatian schools have trickled to Western and Southern Europe, to where now, you know, the Spains and France and Italy's and, you know, even Scandinavia now, they're all developing the game at a pretty interesting pace. But that being said, it's also nice to see shooting as such a priority. You know, it's number one skill, and it should be. We got away from that for a while, and partly because of just how our country gets so excited about athleticism and plays at the rim and things like that. But now, with part of it, you know, our rules, listen, some of it's been strategic, you know, and our rules in the NBA promote a certain style of play and shooting, and it's fun to watch. I mean, heck, it's how fun was that game to watch last night?
Oh, you know, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I think their viewership numbers are up, and part of that's because people can identify with the players on the court right now, with how they shoot it and things like that. And so I think it's great for our country where things are going right now.
That's awesome to hear, and especially coming from you, who's on the pulse of everything that's going on. I've heard lots of people suggest that aside from the NBA, that youth, high school and college rules here in the United States should convert over to the FIBA rules, so that basically everyone in the world is playing under the same rules. What are your thoughts on that?
I would love it. You know, it would make evaluation a lot easier, and I think the world would come together a little bit more. Now, it really has over the years, with relationships and events that I run, and a lot of people know each other now, and it's easier to get information and share information with each other and build relationships. But it would be nice, Alan. It really would. I don't know how it's possible. You know, our league has one set of rules now. College and high school and international, they're closer than anything, just yeah, because of the zone abilities and things like that. But you know, maybe one day we see it. I know they've made strides in the right direction over the years, and hopefully in our lifetime, maybe we'll see it.
That would be pretty cool. Now, this next question, this is kind of my own personal viewpoint. I feel, and I haven't spent near as much time as you on the youth side over internationally, but I kind of have the feeling that here in the United States, at the youth levels, the youngest of levels, we put so much more emphasis on actually winning as opposed to development. And I'm under the impression that they kind of reverse that over in Europe, that they're not as worried about winning per se and playing a ton of games when you're younger. They're so much more worried about developing skills. One, is that fairly accurate? Is that fairly accurate for me to say?
It's very accurate. You know, it's a time management thing too. You have to play and you have to learn how to win. And so, you know, of course you have your games and you have your tournaments and they're playing and they want to win. But there's a big focus on development and footwork in particular. I mean, sometimes you'll walk into a basketball academy and you'll see coaches have players lined up across the floor and they're working on pivots all the way down the floor, and then they'll throw in like a little wrinkle of a situation on the floor, and they have to teach the player how to read that situation at a young age, and they drill it and drill it and drill it, and it's like something you've never seen before. And I, you know, heck, we went over and taught the game many years ago. You
right.
know, we've done all our clinics over there, and you know, they just took it and did some really good things with it, and they're focusing on development, so it's pretty interesting to say the least. But that's how it goes right now over there.
You know, as a performance coach, I've always believed that, first of all, you can train the feet and you can train footwork, and that having perfect feet and perfect footwork can actually make up for a lack of natural athleticism. I mean, it can't make up for it completely, but it can help narrow that gap. And when I think of a player like a Paul Pierce or a Dirk Nowitzki or a Tim Duncan, I mean, I think those guys would readily admit they're probably in the lower third of raw athleticism in the NBA, yet those are three of the best offensive players we've ever seen in the game. Those guys can get any shot they want, anytime they want, from anywhere they want, and I believe a lot of it is because they just have sound footwork. Would you agree?
I agree 100%. You know, when I was down in Dallas, I had the fortune to be around Dirk, and of course Donnie Nelson was the guy that got me started in the NBA, and I was able to watch Dirk work with his private coach Holger from Germany, and the different drills they used to do. Sometimes you look at them, and at least when I was younger, I'd look at that and laugh a little bit and say, what the heck are they doing? But a lot of it was balance related, a lot of it was you know, footwork related, and it all translated to Dirk's body type and how he was you know, going to get his shot off in certain parts of the floor. And I just thought it was really unique, Holger's teaching style. And heck, Dirk's game speaks for itself. He's a Hall of Famer and a special person and player. But you know, part of it for me to go along with the footwork, Alan, is your feel for the game. Because to me, that it's one of the toughest things to read is a person's care factor, and then how they have a feel for the game. And so that's one of the things that I think is very important, you know, in terms of how we look at players nowadays and what we can identify.
Now, when you're saying feel for the game, is that basically a synonym for a basketball player's IQ?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it sure is, you know. You know, I tell you what, I'll take a guy that knows how to play any day of the week. I remember when I was in Minnesota and we drafted Kevin Love, it was, you know, we took a lot of heat for it initially, and Kevin turned out to be pretty good. But one thing about Kevin, other than the fact that he fit that stretch four that could really rebound and pass, but the one thing that we noticed before we drafted him was his ability to read the game. He would catch the ball on a ball reversal. He had already surveyed the entire floor, so he knew where the ball was supposed to go, or what he wanted to do initially, or where the next part of the offense was going to go, or something that was going to happen. I just felt he read the game at a different level, and so yeah, IQ, feel for the game, sure, it's the same.
And how much of that can be taught? I mean, I know that somebody doesn't necessarily come out of the womb understanding how to play the game of basketball, but I mean, how much of that feel is kind of an intrinsic talent, like other things, versus how much can literally be taught? And then about what age does most of that need to be taught? I mean, if you get a guy that's 18 or 19 years old and has never really played the game, does he really have a chance to learn how to have a great feel?
You know, that's kind of the usual question. That could be a podcast by itself, I think, with a bunch of guys at a round table. But that's a tough one because, you know, the older we see a guy start to play, just the less he understands how to play. I mean, there's a one-off. There's a one-off in everything in life that a guy just gets it. But it's rare. I mean, if we do the analytics on that, for example, it's just no, it won't equate. So I think the younger you are, the better teachers you have, and if they stress reading situations, if you just roll the ball out all the time and you're not teaching and having people read the game, just not really knowing the floor, the balance on the floor, where things people should be, what they should be doing, and once that establish itself, of course you want to have some creativity too. You don't want to be robots out there, but.
Right.
I think, you know, for me, when I grew up, I was lucky. I had some really good coaches. Then my brother was a great teacher. He taught me a lot how to play. He always stuck me in the park and said that's part of it. You know, you need to learn how to get tough and learn how to win, you know, cause you know how it is in the park, you know, winter stays on.
Yes, and absolutely.
If you're playing to 11, point 11 usually takes about 25, 30 minutes cause everyone's fouling and it's hard to get that last point. But you learn your creativity there a little bit with some freedom. And then I believe teaching the game is super, super important in terms of how you read it.
Yeah, that makes sense. For any of our younger listeners right now, a park is an outdoor place where people used to play basketball and develop their game. No, I'm just kidding. Because you know what I find interesting, though, is now at 40, and I still play pickup basketball here and there, I feel like I have so much of a better feel for the game and understanding that I do now than I did when I was a teenager. Now, of course, physically, I can't do a fraction of the stuff I used to do when I was younger. But I do think that experience and playing and learning how to study the game as a student of the game can help develop your feel and your IQ. Because there's no doubt I have a higher basketball IQ today than I did when I played. Sadly, my physical hasn't been able to keep up.
Sure. No question. I mean, that's part of it. But I'm excited to where the game is going. I think we went through a little period of, you know, AAU where it got away from developing, you know, skills. And I think we're slowly starting to turn it around. People understand the importance of that. So it's good.
Absolutely. Last question for you here. What would you say is the biggest adjustment a player needs to make when they're going from college to playing in the NBA?
Well, a few things. You know, the rules are different. Therefore, rotations, you know, sets, defensive schemes are all new for this person, so to speak. And NBA culture, having vets, you know, veterans maybe 8 to 12 years older than you, that's a big adjustment. Your routine, such as how to be a pro. You know, you really aren't restricted by hours like in college, and so you have to figure out time management. How do you manage your time every day? And, oh, by the way, throw in some significant money. Maybe you've had it, maybe you have not had it prior. To me, discipline at that point is super important. And, you know, we see it all the time, but, you know, generally, you're not done developing yet. I firmly believe, I did a study on this years and years ago, and I took 100 players and tried to figure out when their most important development years were for skill. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was between like 15, 16 and 21, 22. Oh, wow. And after that age, Alan, now, from let's say 22 to 30, the game slows down to you. Why? Because you get a little more experience. You can read it a little bit. You're not as nervous maybe, or you just have more poise, or you're more of a vet. You've played a million games by now. Of course, you start to get stronger. You know, your body starts to mature. And, you know, those things happen. But in terms of your skill set, it's rare to see a guy's skill set change after 22. Now, it can a little bit, yeah. Maybe a go-to move, you know, a little bit more consistency, things like that. But your skill set is generally developed by then. And so, you know, sometimes you get a guy in the league at 19, 20. Well, you still got some time to develop a few things. So, you know, we got to get to work, and your time management is super important. And so, I mean, they get these young men get bombarded when they come in the league because they see the league as, you know, I'm in the league now. Okay, well, you just started. You know, they haven't really arrived yet. You know, and so that's where it's funny. You know, people. I see all these draft sites and different things, and they all do a great job, and they're hardworking people, and they're pretty accurate sometimes. But that's only one piece of the puzzle. The other pieces are background checks and you know, analytics and measurables, and there's so many different the interview process. There's so many different things that go into drafting a player and wanting to have a player in your organization, and so. You know, he may check all the boxes on talent, but if we have dug deeper and tried to figure out what makes this person tick, let's say he's 19 and we're about to draft him. He checks all the boxes, but, you know, his care factor is very small and he's not a worker. And, well, how much better is this guy going to get? And so you got to go through all these things to make sure, you know, you're investing your money and your draft pick and your resources wisely.
Man, I absolutely love that. I love the fact that almost every single thing you just touched on as far as a player, not only being able to get to the highest level, which is only one rung, it's to be able to stay there, has to do with the mental side, with the emotional side, with discipline, with all these things off the court that I think that's so important to illustrate to younger players that the ability to shoot, pass, rebound, defend, and handle the ball and to be athletic, that's only a piece of the pie. It's granted, it's a big piece and an important piece, but all of these other factors will determine whether or not somebody reaches the pinnacle of their success. Awesome stuff, man.
Yeah, no question. I tell you, one of the best teammates I've ever been around. He probably doesn't get enough credit for it, although he's got some. I was fortunate to be around Kevin Garnett when I was in Minnesota, and I'll never forget, we had drafted a couple guys, and I think it was the first or second day of training camp, and KG, you know, was coming out of the locker room. He walked into the gym, and our rookies were sitting on the sideline, kind of just waiting for whether the coaching staff to come or us to show up and get training camp started. And KG is an unbelievable worker. You know, KG's KG for a reason, you know. And he was they call him the video game for many years because he just, everything he did, his footwork was impeccable, and he knew how to get to his spots. And, well, he wasn't born that way.
Right.
You know, a guy puts in the time, and the things that he used to do, he was so disciplined. So he walked in the gym and saw the rookies, and I won't go into everything he said exactly, but
yeah, this is a family show, so we can't.
He couldn't believe he saw two young rookies sitting there when there was a ball. It was an open gym, and practice hadn't started yet. But let's get some work in, you know. And he held them accountable, and they got up and got some work in. But you know, he's a pro, and sometimes you have to learn how to be a pro, you know, and myself included. When I didn't know how to be a pro my first couple of years playing overseas. I saw some guys that, you know, ahead of me that they got their work in and how they got their work in. And so time management is super important. And then you got to figure out what your routine is, because you got to get better, and you got to maintain, you know.
Absolutely. And I think NBA teams that intentionally bring a veteran player back, even if they can't contribute a ton on the court minutes wise, to be that example and to model what it means to be a pro is such a great move by an organization. And I'll say, even though that I'm obviously not a player anymore, I certainly want to give you credit, Pete, because you've really shown me what it takes to be a pro in this industry and in this business. And for that, I truly thank you, man. And it's been great having you on today.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Alan. That means a lot, and I think the world to you as well. I have a lot of admiration for you and what you do.
Thanks, brother. Well, that's it for me, y'all. Thanks for listening. I hope we helped you raise your game. For more on TPG, please follow at TPG Sports Group on Twitter and Instagram, and visit tpgsportsgroup.com for info on all of their events. All right, let's get back in the gym.